The Technocrats. I am an essential worker. Originally written for the Anti-Politics Substack on 12th of October, 2021. The modern technological state is a bafflingly complex entity to the average individual within it. They do not, and feel they cannot, know or understand the function of each part of bureaucracy around them, even as it affects their everyday lives. This overload of information, rules and regulations, and the sheer size and number of institutions forces individuals to concede within themselves that these institutions are necessary. Surely, in some way, they are needed for the continued peace and prosperity, even if they don't understand how. There must be some unseen, knowledgeable class of people who keep it all running and prevent the abject chaos promised should these institutions collapse. In the same way agents of opaque organizations such as MI5 or the CIA are posited as part of the thin blue line between you and the violent tendencies of your fellow man, the managerial class are posited as the thin paper line between you and a world without order. They are the technocrats. How these technocrats view themselves and the people around them shapes the fabric of the modern state and enforces a hierarchy where proximity to state power determines your status in wider society. They are the civilian foot soldiers of the establishment and play a less visible but equally important role to that of the security state. Their place within the system and their hopes to achieve a higher status within it drive their belief systems and inner self. There is no better example of a technocrat who has gained status in Britain over the last 2 years than a doctor. In terms of social status, doctors enjoy the highest non-elite rung of the technocratic ladder, and the government involvement in healthcare ensures their place at the table when it comes to decisions on shaping society. Doctors are socialized their entire lives to become doctors. Most do not leave the education system until well into their 20s. Often their entire identity is tied to the fact they are a doctor. Throughout their lives, their decision-making and the decision-making of their parents is guided by the goal to become a doctor. Most come from families already associated with the medical system or some significant technocratic status. They are an example of a mass credentialist class and regulation creating an industry where only those with enough money, time, and connections can enter. Doctors and their associated race status and power help perpetuate the credentialism of the system around them and are motivated to defend and enhance it. This further elevates their status over time and ensures the doctoral class can police who is and isn't a high-level medical technocrat. Within a technocracy, their word holds more power, both themselves and the layman. They are a doctor, and you are not. This extends well outside of their fields of study and into the political sphere, where they can arbitrate with authority on topics they have no official expertise in. In a system of purely private property, this would make them arrogant and rife with cronyism. But once healthcare is codified as a branch of the government, and when all technical credentials require government approval, this status is officiated, defended, and sanctified by the state. The strata above medical doctors are those who are an active part of the elite class, the government experts. Technocrats in this sphere are disproportionately represented by medical doctors, upper echelons of the legal profession, academics, and journalists. This is where the priests of the technocracy reside, the amorphous group referred to in the media as simply the scientists. Their expertise, qualifications, affiliations, and agendas are rarely communicated clearly. They are the scientists, and they police what is and isn't the science. A set of beliefs which are settled, sanctified, and static. This is how the use of massive organs of state to manage large aspects of an individual's life is justified. They are neutral, objective, scientific, apolitical, and above all, necessary organizations, staffed with people who know better than you how a specific area of your life should function. The argument goes that although you as an individual have no direct control over their actions in any way, your vote as interpreted by the political class, means you have indirect control over their actions. The logic then follows that these organizations are just giving you exactly what you're asked for, and the individuals within them are acting on your will and the collective will of the country as a whole. To question the actions of technocratic organizations is to question the will of the people. It is to reject the medicine democratically prescribed to you like a petulant toddler. Experts and scientists are also imbued with the power to defy the will of the masses when it is deemed necessary. Their elevator status gives them a veto when the electorate makes the wrong decisions. The illusion of neutrality allows them to rubber stamp decisions when they fall in line with their interests and to disregard them when they do not. It also means that passing legislation or conducting activism that conflicts with the interest of technocrats and the organizations they inhabit is a far more difficult proposition. The highest strata of a technocracy are the political, judiciary, and moneyed elites, to whom officials who are elected are often subordinate. High court judges, special advisors, central bankers, and department heads. They may be national or even supranational in scale. Their combined influence and power is sovereign. The rules of the system, by definition, do not apply to their actions, as they decide what is and isn't an exception and collectively define the system's parameters. They are only accountable to each other and very often have interlinked financial and power interests. They belong to an elite class who are raised, educated, housed, and even socialized in virtual isolation from the rest of the population. These elites overwhelmingly come from high-level political and technocratic dynasties, being groomed for power from an early age, who have intentionally sought out positions of unaccountable power. They may publicly belong to different political causes or have the veneer of technocratic neutrality, but privately, theirs is a much smaller world with its own social, political, and moral norms. It is safe to assume that by demonstrating an ability to gain and maintain access to the strata of the technocratic and political structure, they are capable of higher levels of Machiavellian thought and action than those subordinate to them. They must also then be a group most willing to wield power for self-interest, as well as most capable of doing so in unaccountable ways. These elites are often cycled into different roles to maintain the illusion of meritocracy, or when they become unpalatable to the public in their existing role. Therefore, most will spend their entire professional lives within these elite strata. Keeping in mind this structure, we must analyze how technocrats are able to justify the implemented policies in a practical sense that govern the behavior of wider society. Within a modern state, this is functionally how the process takes place. The political elites in power formulate a referendum where they decide what questions should be voted on. The electorate makes a decision on that specific question. The political class decide if that decision is valid or not, then interpret what that decision means. The technocratic elites decide how the decision should be implemented in practice. The middle managers create a framework for what will be required for implementation, and the frontline technocrats below them set about implementing that framework. For the will of the people to be implemented, all these steps must be followed in good faith by honest actors who are wholly competent, from the apex of the power structure right down to the minimum wage worker. The politicians must ask the right question in an honest manner. They cannot use propaganda or coercion to influence the outcome. The electorate must understand the question and its ramifications and participate in a neutral election process free from influence from the technocratic or elite structure itself. The political elites must declare that the election was indeed a valid one, and those elites must then take action to implement the decision, even if it directly conflicts with their interests, and interpret it in a neutral and honest way. The experts must then decide if this decision is good and neutral, and must then themselves actively participate in deciding how to implement the decision or whether it is implementable at all. All layers of middle management between the experts and those who deal directly with the population must also be on board with implementing the decision in a way the political and elite class have instructed, and the lowly foot soldiers must be able to stomach this system of implementation. The larger the institution and overarching power structure, the more steps this game of telephone, or Chinese whispers for my fellow Brits, goes through, and the greater chance there is one group who will simply say no, or for them to fundamentally alter, through malice, incompetence, or simply indifference, what that decision and its implementation means. Decisions that benefit the higher levels of an organization, not the population it supposedly serves, are therefore the most likely to be fully implemented. In this way, they act in a fashion that cannot be neutral and involves the active management of society to serve their own ends, or the ends of the organization. To say otherwise is to say technocrats are incapable of acting in self-interest, or in a Machiavellian fashion when presented with the opportunity. This is why institutions always tend towards expansion, why they fiercely resist all attempts to reform, and why, as Ted Kaczynski lays out in his work, technocratic systems, especially monopolistic ones of the state, morph into simply being self-perpetuating and self-defending as everyone in them is incentivized towards this outcome. To quote, "A subordinate system that a government creates for its own purposes can turn into a self-propagating system in its own right. They may even become dominant over the government. Thus, bureaucracies commonly are concerned more with their own power and security than with the fulfillment of their public responsibilities. Every bureaucracy develops a tendency to preserve itself, to fatten itself parasitically. It also develops a tendency to become a power in of itself, autonomous, over which the governments lose all real control." That's by Ted Kaczynski from Anti-Tech Revolution. To analyze those who operate these systems fully, we need to abandon the neutral-sounding newspeak to describe how governance really functions. In his magnum opus, Leviathan and Its Enemies, Samuel T. Francis uses the word managerialist to describe technocrats who manage society. To quote, "The technicality and scientism of the managerial elite suggests that a more appropriate term than manager for the members of this group might be technocrat. Indeed, those writers who have discussed the managerial revolution and the managerial elite have often used the term technocrat almost as a synonym for manager. In his view, there is a distinction between the purely technocratic and the class of people who manage society." Francis goes on to say, to quote, "The historical key to the managerial revolution lies in the revolution of mass and scale and the need for technical skill in operating the mass organizations that resulted from this revolution. The power that technical skill acquired therefore depends on and results from the nature of mass organization. By themselves, technical skills and functions do not lead to power, a point similar to the criticism of Burnham by Mills and Girth, and acquire power only when they are applied to the operation and direction of mass organizations of state, economy, and culture." End quote. Distinguishing all jobs that require technical skill from the modern form of state-led managerial technocracy is vitally important. Those who occupy technical roles in the private sector do not carry the same mystique, elevated position, self-image and benefits as those technocrats who operate under the direct direction of the state, but it can be lent to them when their cooperation is required. Large-scale managerial technocracies require by nature the reducing of status those seen as not necessary or combative to the collective goals. Who is dispensable or indispensable becomes the purview of the state, down to the arbitrary levels of who is and isn't considered an essential worker. No society can be truly egalitarian, and technocracy offers the illusion of fairness by adding a layer of mysticism to those higher up in the power structure as experts, be they medical, political, or monetary experts. The decisions of these experts are therefore no longer arbitrary, but neutral and scientific. They are qualified to know what is best for society as a whole, and you must occupy a technocratic rung parallel or above them to be qualified to question their decision-making. We can draw recent examples with how this strict hierarchy works in practice. During the lockdowns, some of the managerial status of the technocrats has been extended to those who are required by the power structure to continue working. They are awarded, not monetarily, but primarily with status. They are an essential worker. You are not. This new status comes with the other attached privileges of being a low-rung technocrat. The emergent essential worker class is now more qualified to comment on decision-making, and their work, by definition, is more meaningful than the work of others. A large mass of people has had their status and privileges elevated, whilst privilege and status was revoked or withheld from others. Those who find themselves below the bottom rung of the managerial pyramid face reduced access to resources, travel, state-mandated unemployment, and exposure to new reprisals from the security state. State-led distinctions between what is and isn't an essential worker and what undesirables are prohibited from undertaking is the bread and butter of tightly managed socialist societies. Western liberal democracies have also been primed to accept this practice when it is presented with a veneer of crisis. Both the First and Second World Wars brought this distinction for the first time to the economy at large. And throughout the lockdowns, technocrats have talked glowingly about the peacetime war economy of COVID and how it allows governments to exercise tight controls. Please do see our, I guess now slightly outdated but still relevant, COVID war economy video. I will link that in the description. Whether or not you think the measures are justified to combat the crisis does not change the realities of power and the large-scale power transfer to the technocratic and political class in these instances of crisis. Once again, the clearly totalitarian measures put in place are framed as the neutral will of experts, assessing and asserting control for the survival of the people. Much like a Roman emperor suspending the bickering Senate in a time of crisis. As seen with vaccine mandates, when the lower rungs of the technocratic class turn against the programs of their managers, they are dealt with in a ruthless fashion, expelled wholesale or economically disenfranchised until they cooperate. Those who do not serve the interests of the elite strata are systematically weeded out of large-scale government organizations. It is a powerful demonstration of the hegemony these institutions must enforce and how, when they come into conflict with the realities of power, protest and appeals to democracy are fruitless. The French author and World War I soldier Georges Bonanos put it thus when addressing Franklin D. Roosevelt, to quote, "I am tired, Mr. Roosevelt, of hearing it said that the democracies are the opposite of the dictatorships. Democracy offers no defense to dictators. That is the truth. Every democracy can, at any moment, have an acute attack of dictatorship, as one has acute attacks of appendicitis. The national temperament can do nothing about it." If a liberal democracy can simply cease to be governed as such at a moment's notice, then functionally it was never liberal or democracy in the first place. Those are merely platitudes to placate the populace once those who manage the state declare there is normality again. The ability to suspend the normality also means those who benefit from a managerial state are incentivized to generate and perpetuate these periods of crisis, to enshrine permanently the temporary measures imposed under the crisis conditions. This cycle of change, creating a ratcheting effect, is described in detail by Robert Higgs in his book Crisis and Leviathan. Technocracies are, by nature of their complexity, highly compartmentalized. The technical elite of this present moment are not the architects of the system. Through generations of technocratic rule and technological development, both in complexity and scale, they are a product of it. On the lower rungs, this role is simply to turn the specific cog within the great machine of the technical society, having the collective illusion of piloting events on a societal level. The mentality of being dwarfed as a human being by the sheer mass and scale of the state at large is shared by both managerial technocracy and liberal democracy. Ultimately, what technocrats and managerialists do is propagandize and seduce an agitated mass of people with promises that they, the experts, will handle all the problems of the modern world the populace find too scary, confusing, or difficult to handle, if they just hand over the power to do so. This also comes with the implicit and sometimes explicit promise that they will quell, by force if necessary, those who are anti-progress and those anti-progress forces, those who do not want to hand over that power. As society becomes more complex, it requires further management by technocrats, who in turn make society more complex and demand greater powers from the populace in response. The populace then becomes abstracted from the realities of how those functions are performed, instead entrusting ever greater parts of their lives to the technocrats to manage as they become ever more helpless and docile. This is, as Ted Kaczynski described, learned helplessness from technology. This reality cannot be reformed away. Adding systems of control to prevent or mitigate systems of control only further blows and perpetuates the systems. In short, there is no managerial solution to managerialism. Food production, policing, justice, education, medicine, transport, and the arbitration of property rights are mysterious, abstract systems to modern populations. But for all of the previous eras of human history, they were immediate and vital parts of life to be actively participated in. We see our current situation as simply the way things are, when to previous generations it would be an unthinkable dystopia they were assured would never take hold by the elites in power at the time. If we trust a technocratic class to manage society, down to the level of controlling our basic necessities for survival, then what happens when those technocrats fail to do so, or bleaker still, decide certain non-essential sections of society no longer deserve to survive? And what hope do those people have of resisting it if they can no longer survive without the permission and assistance of the managerial technocratic class? I'll finish with a quote here from Liberty or Equality, The Challenge of Our Time, by Cunot Lydon. To quote, "In a modern mammoth state, the individual at national elections is nothing more than a microbe. Thus, nobody is indispensable is a highly democratic slogan. The conservative and personalist would say, everybody is unique. Everybody is indispensable. Nobody can be replaced. Even at the risk of being accused of delighting in exaggerations and hyperbolic statements, we insist that the aforementioned democratic slogan leads straight to the cremation ovens of Treblinka.
I am an essential worker."
Oh, thank you for watching, guys. This is a slightly longer one, and there are probably a couple of stumbles in here, but this is one of the longer essays I've written. Again, if you want to support us, you can subscribe through the Anti-Politics Substack in a paid capacity. We have a Ko-fi link now that accepts all forms of payment, or you can add super thanks through YouTube itself. We do still stream Monday and Wednesday if this is your first video somehow, so do check out our back catalogue. Again, I will try and get these up as soon as possible, but as you can hear from the beginning that this is from October 2021, there is quite a backlog of written content that is not yet recorded content. So I would just go over the Substack if you are curious about what doesn't get put on the YouTube and gets turned into more of a written format.